Hey there, and welcome to another mini section of the philosophy of astrology. I anticipate two more of these, which I'm going to try to do this week before we move on to how to read your own natal chart. The ideas here I'm giving are largely theoretical, but it's important to have a theoretical framework behind the astrology that you're doing so that you have some fodder to think about what you are doing. And in the next three segments, I'm going to do my best to convey some of those ideas. And I do so knowing that astrology is an extraordinarily complex topic, and there is no end to what you can do with it, but there's also no end to how deep you can dig. And if I haven't said this before, I want to say that the most important thing that you can keep in mind when you are doing astrology is asking yourself why you are consulting the oracle. It's not that the reasons are in a hierarchy or are subject to judgment, but rather that the motive for getting information is going to direct what you do and how you go about doing it. And if you don't know why you are doing it, it is okay to be investigating out of curiosity, be it spiritual or intellectual or just for your own edification. But if that's the case, you want to know that. Most people come to astrology these days for self-knowledge, I think, that they want to know about themselves and they want to know about what is going to happen. And knowing yourself is a good task for astrology. It is a task that astrology is very well adapted for, and that we in the 21st century, having been conditioned now by well over half a century of psychological emphasis on astrology, which I'm going to talk about in the next recording, psychological astrology, what it is and what its limitations are. There are many ways to do astrology, but you want to know what it is you are after. You want to know what you are seeking, and you want to be as honest about that with yourself as you possibly can, so that you can give yourself the tools and the resources to get the information that you need, or focus your mind in a certain way. The topic that I've got for you today is, as promised, a set of what I'm going to call contexts in which you can think about astrology, in which you can think about what you are doing and how it is working. Because though it may not matter if your astrology does not work, if you're not getting any results, if you start to get results, one of the questions you're going to have is, how on earth does this work? And if you are seeking results, if you're seeking a certain end or outcome with your astrology, it also helps to know some of the ways by which it may work. I am one of those people who, after much investigation and consideration, with a very strong background, both writing about science and also writing about and investigating many forms of spirituality, have come to the resting place where I think it's best to understand astrology as a divination system. And that is probably worth its own talk, and maybe that'll be the third in the series of three that I want to conclude with and then move on. A divination system is something that allows the entry of the random into the inquiry for knowledge or information. So an example of a divination system is tarot cards. And what makes tarot cards a divination system is not the content of the cards, but rather that you shuffle the deck and choose the cards randomly. And then the cards are turned over face up, and then you read them. And that is That is what makes it divination. I Ching, another example. You shake the coins and throw them, or you dump the yarrow sticks and you read them, but it is the random placement of the yarrow sticks, or the random arrangement of the coins falling in heads or tails, that makes it divination. Another important thing that makes it divination is you come to the oracle with a question. It is not a good idea to go to the oracle without a question, because when you get an answer, you do not know what the answer pertains to. So that said, and we will build toward that in this next series of three discussions. Again, today's discussion is going to talk about astrology as a hologram, and then a few other principles from quantum physics that will elucidate the possibilities of astrology and how this thing might have some bearing on our lives. The second is going to look at the invention of psychological astrology by Dane Rudyard. And then the third is going to cover astrology as divination. Now, I would again caution you that these are matters that take much reflection. And the practice of astrology requires patience and the willingness to stand in the face of the unknown and the willingness to contemplate existence and your relationship to existence. But one of the things we're doing with astrology is we are using a holographic model where we are assuming in some way, without necessarily saying so, that the part contains the whole. And the part that contains the whole is the moment of birth generates a birth chart, or the moment of a question generates a horary chart. But let's just work on natal astrology now. We'll come to horary another time. That the natal of the moment of birth creates the natal chart. So there's this point of origin of a person's life, which should be timed at the first breath. And by the way, the reason that conception is not timed is there's no way to know what time conception happens. If we knew what time conception happened, we could record it. But, you know, even if you were to time the ejaculation that led to the pregnancy, that still would not be the moment of conception. Conception occurs anywhere between 24 hours and 3 days after after the sperm is introduced into the woman's body and the egg begins its trip down the fallopian tube, and nobody knows what time that last sperm cell meets that ovum, or maybe that first sperm cell, and that is the moment of conception. It's still a perilous journey. There's still implantation. There's still going to be the environment to deal with. But anyway, we don't know what time any of these things happen, but we do know what time a child is born. And the concept of astrology as being a hologram is the idea that the life story is told in the moment of birth, which is then extrapolated into a model of the solar system, and that the model of the solar system, the diagram of the positions of the planets in the solar system, corresponds to the life of the person. Under a divination model or a holographic model, it is not that these things cause the life to be the way that it is. And if you'll notice in my writing, I'm very careful about not using the concept of causation. I don't, you know, say that Saturn is causing this. This is representative. There is a parallel going on, and that parallel is another holographic property. So in my article from a few years back, and I'll read you a few paragraphs and then extrapolate on that a bit, I explain that the central question of astrology is really that of consciousness rather than of causation. We might ask, are the planets causing events? But the more important question is, what is the factor that is causing awareness of both events and planets, which share a relationship exclusively through the perceiver? Astrology is a non-linear system of thought, perhaps the oldest and most enduring of the non-linear systems of thought in Western culture. But it's also a model of time with many cycles present. And so one of the things we get with astrology is a model of time. And by the way, this is very important when it comes to reading progressions, because in particular, progressions are making use of the concept of a hologram. Now, you may be familiar with the concept of chaos theory and a fractal. Chaos theory is the idea that the random patterns of nature, which would seem to be completely random and chaotic, actually have distinct patterns in them, and those patterns cannot only be seen to replicate, but they can also be read. And the idea of a fractal is invented by Dr. Benoit Mandelbrot at IBM, is the most distinct expression of the idea that the whole contains the parts and the parts contain the whole, and that what we're really doing is a form of pattern recognition when we do astrology. So an example of a of chaos theory and a fractal is you take 1 mile of coastline and you see that that 1 mile of coastline can in some way predict the entire coastline. You take one piece of the branch, you take one sample of the branches of a very complicated looking tree, and you can see that the tree itself can be extrapolated from that pattern. So the whole and the parts contain one another. And there are ways to do astrology this way. For example, you can take an exercise of cutting a chart up into, 10 pieces. You can just take a razor blade, turn the chart over, slice it up into 10 pieces, and pick one piece which contains a couple of planets and a house cusp, and you can start to read the chart just from that small piece. And actually, when you read a chart, that's one of the things that you are doing. We're going to get to this in the first section of how to read your own chart, but you are always reading one part of the chart at a time, and then you see a connection to another storyline or another part of the chart, and eventually you start to see a pattern. And the chart seems to repeat the same thing over and over again, and that's one of the ways that you know that you are onto something, is that you're seeing the same thing repeated, and you know that you're not forcing this interpretation on it, you're not twisting it. So you have to be honest with yourself, and you have to get to the point where the chart is the thing that seems to be doing the informing, not you rationalizing what you think or what you want the chart to say. And so part of the discipline of astrology is a kind of intellectual honesty, and you need to be willing to let go of your theory or let go of your interpretation when you see something that might contradict it, or when the evidence starts to mount in the direction that goes other than your perception without the chart, your first perception of the chart, or of anything else. So the holographic exercise is, and you can try this, is you can take your own natal chart, print out a copy of it, take a ruler, flip the chart over, and slice the chart into 10 chunks, and pick one and start reading just that part and see if it doesn't tell you something about your whole chart that is true of your whole chart. Okay, so most theories of astrology that claim that astrology is scientific imply that there is some gravity effect. And the critics of astrology love to say this when they say, well, the gravity of the obstetrician in the delivery room is stronger than the gravity of Jupiter. Therefore, how can it work? Well, first of all, is that true? Is the gravity of the obstetrician in the delivery room stronger than the gravity of Jupiter? In particular, Jupiter. Jupiter wobbles the sun out of its orbit. Jupiter is, I don't remember how many miles it's got away. It's got a 12-year orbit. And as it makes that 12-year orbit, it shakes the sun. No obstetrician shakes the sun. And so it is not true that Jupiter has a stronger gravitational influence than does. of the doctor standing in the room or the building. But there are many things in astrology that have absolutely no gravity at all. For example, a house cusp has no mass, no gravity. The ascendant has no mass and no gravity. The part of fortune has no mass and no gravity. There are at least 8 hypothetical points that do not have any mass. They are merely mathematical calculations that are symbolic representations of cycles. For example, there's a point called Cupido. Cupido has an orbit of 262 years, but it doesn't exist. It is a thing that exists only in the minds of astrologers, printed on paper on an astrology chart, or that exists inside of an astrology software program, which is not really existing at all. And so you could then ask, well, how could a point like Cupido or Hades or Zeus or Kronos or Trans-Pluto have any influence at all if they have no gravity? That's because, for the most part, gravity is irrelevant in astrology. There are much more elegant principles that are operating. And plus, once you understand the difference between Newton's concept of gravity and Einstein's concept of gravity, well, you can see that there's a very big difference between them. Okay, so I want to go over a couple of scientific principles that are newer than gravity that will give you an idea of how many other things might be acting in, you know, quote unquote, whether astrology works. But remember that astrology works because we are working it, and it only works in the hands of a practitioner who is qualified and competent and thoughtful, respectful and philosophical, and able to actually do this mysterious thing of turning water into wine and taking these dots on the page and reading them and creating something relevant. Remember, at all times, this is a wholly human experience. It is an experience of consciousness. It is not about something operating externally. It is about what we notice. And therefore, the quality of your consciousness and the quality of what you notice is very important. And it's also crucial to recognize that what you notice, what you are trained to notice, and therefore what you read into a chart is initially wholly dependent on the time and history in which you are alive, because the concepts that we are using change throughout history. For example, concepts such as fate and free will are entirely different notions today in 2021 than they were, for example, during the lifetime of someone like Erasmus or other church theologians who may have concerned themselves with matters of fate and free will, which almost all have religious overtones. And so one of the things that it helps to do as a student of astrology is to recognize the biases that have been put into your mind by philosophical systems such as religion, which you need to recognize so that you are not inadvertently imposing them on people. And this would also include bullshit concepts of science. Okay, so here's an overview of concepts of science that are more recent than Newtonian gravity, i.e. Jupiter exerts a stronger influence than the obstetrician. And by the way, Jupiter may exert a stronger gravitational influence, but what is the influence in consciousness of the obstetrician or the midwife or the nurses standing around in the delivery room? Does this entity coming into the world feel welcome in the very place and time where it comes in? That is a really good question, and you can often find it in the chart. When we get into how to read your own natal chart, we're going to talk about finding things in the chart. I may mention that also in the discussion of psychological astrology as opposed to mundane astrology. So let me make a note of that, because that'll be a natural place to weave that in. And then it carries forward into Finding things in the chart carries forward into all forms of astrology, horary, event astrology, mundane astrology, natal astrology, and all the rest. You are looking for representations in the chart. So that's going to be this is a topic to cover in pretty much every one of these discussions. Okay, so let me get to the point here. Here's some other principles that are operating besides mere gravity. Space-time. One of the great discoveries of the 20th century is that space and time are not separate phenomenon. This idea is explored in Einstein's theory of special relativity, which views space and time as one thing. They are one textured substance, pretty much one dimension. We exist within space-time. Related functions, space and time are related, completely interrelated functions or experiences. For example, the faster one travels, the slower time goes, meaning that space and time are inseparable. We see them that we see them as separate is an illusion, but really we are living in a space-time continuum. Astrology predicted the discovery of space-time with its consistent use of space and time as functions integral of one another, since charts are cast for a location in space and a moment in time, and are fully dependent upon both to exist. In astrology, space has never existed without time, and vice versa. Astrology also uses space and time, tracking large and small cycles with the movements of celestial bodies. So they're moving through space, but we think of them as time. Jupiter is Jupiter, but it's also 12 years. Okay, next, matter-energy conversion. One of the implications of relativity is that matter and energy are interchangeable, that they are one phenomenon in different forms. In other words, they are essentially different frequency resonances, and when you have one frequency resonance, you have a nuclear bomb blast, or you have water, and and when you have a different frequency, you have a hunk of plutonium, or you have an ice cube, right? These are energy states as relative to states of matter. Much of modern physics has concerned itself with the integration of seemingly varied forces of nature. For example, the integration of separately discovered forms of magnetism and electricity as the electromagnetic force. Astrology has always viewed matter, that is, the planets, as energetic forces, recognizing that the patterns that their material movements represent depict or cause movements of energy in the physical world. Whatever the causative element is, the connection between the energy of a seemingly dead or unconscious thing, a planet, and events or experiences in the field of consciousness is in fact implicit throughout astrology. So astrology is a kind of a demonstration of many many different things that later were given names, but astrology has not come back and claimed. Another one of these is particle wave conversion. In a similar fashion, astrology has always viewed particles as waveforms and vice versa. For example, each planet viewed over space-time is really a waveform. Where these waveforms intersect, we have points of contact called aspects. Whether light or a unit of energy called an electron is really a particle or a wave or a photon is one of the first questions the quantum physics had to address, and it discovered they are really both behaving different ways in different situations, including what they are thought of as. You will see them as what you think of them as. It was a shock to scientists to see a photon behave as a particle in one experiment and a wave in another experiment. But astrology has always recognized this, treating planets at different times as particles, for example, in a natal chart, and as waveforms, for example, in a transit or a progression, but they are the same planet. It is just how we are looking at it. It is the context. And remember, in astrology, context is everything. Remember that. Write that on the wall. Context is everything. For example, context is the question that you bring to the chart. Okay, chaos and fractals. Two interrelated scientific advances since the 1980s explain and illustrate long-observed properties in astrology. Both were made possible by the advent of powerful enough computers to handle the complex mathematics involved. Planetary movements are a complex pattern of nature. So they are essentially never repeats. A complex pattern never repeats. There's never going to be a day that is like today. Or if there is, it would be so far in the future that you could never predict when it would happen again. But then the more variables you introduce to the chart, for example, whether you're working with seven planets or 100 planets, make the particular day or event you're talking about far less probable to happen. Okay, so I talked about fractal science, where the pattern in the shoreline can mimic the pattern of the entire coastline, right? You take a sample. However, it is worth experimenting with this. And by the way, one of the ways that you can experiment with this the best is when you see transits and progressions happening at the same time, and the transits and the progressions mimic one another or reflect one another in meaning. One last comment about chaos theory. I have a book called Chaos and Fractals, New Frontiers in Science, and the authors write, "When we examine the development of a process over a period of time, we speak in terms used in chaos theory." Okay, when we examine the development of a process over a long period of time, we speak in terms of chaos theory. When we are more interested in the structural forms which a chaotic process leaves in its wake, then we are using the terminology of fractal geometry, which is really the geometry whose structures are what give order to chaos. So remember that the planetary movements are supposed to be chaotic. They never happen again. You add more and more and more planets, then we take a picture of that called a natal chart, and we read it, and we somehow expect this to have meaning. And lo and behold, most times it does actually have meaning. So when we take this completely chaotic thing and we freeze frame it, call it a chart, and look at it, well, what the heck was that? What was that, right? And astrology would be mind-blowing if anybody really looked at actually what it is doing. Okay, here's another one. Multidimensionality. Because astrology has worked in and with space-time since its inception, it is a multidimensional art. Astrology takes a more complex view of time than the simple one-strand chronological view taken by society in its train schedules. So people view time as an arrow shooting. That is ridiculous. First of all, the shape of time is not a straight line. As far as I can see, the shape of line is more like a spirograph. Remember that toy, the spirograph toy? If you don't have that, look it up and see what that toy is. And then there are, but to me it is a spirograph that is less geometrically precise because everything is moving in an ellipse pattern, not in a circular pattern. And then there are times when these cycles cross over. And so while the whole pattern might not repeat, the whole chart might not repeat, you might, for example, take a sub-pattern of Mars making aspects to Sedna, you know, Mars moving around the zodiac in 2 years, and Sedna taking something like 11,000 years, but Mars and Sedna will make aspects on a regular basis. And then you can study that pattern and see what is going on there. A few other things that make astrology multidimensional. For example, the lunar nodes are a good idea of that. What are the lunar nodes? Well, the lunar nodes predict the place along the ecliptic where the sun and the moon are going to get together in the same place at the same time. And so the lunar nodes have no mass. They don't really exist. They merely predict an event in the future, and then somehow they can be read for meaning. So you may have the north node in the eighth house and the sun and the moon in two completely different houses, somewhere far away from the eighth house. Well, what does the lunar node in the eighth mean? Well, it means that when those planets made a contact right around the time of your birth, it would have taken place in the eighth house. We are far from the nuts and bolts of normal reality here. We are looking at things that may have happened in the past or in the future as having relevance in the present. Hence, your lunar nodes have meaning, even though there's not an eclipse anywhere in the vicinity of your birth. The lunar nodes are still meaningful, and to me, this is a multidimensional effect. Okay, another one, the transpersonal realm. Astrology, it's been a while since I wrote this article. It really could use a rewrite and an expansion based on my new understanding, but I think that basically it holds up. The transpersonal realm, astrology relies on the use of archetypes and constellations as the basis of one facet of its language. Other elements of astrology are more dependent on language of mathematics, principally the relationships between aspects. But for the archetypes, i.e., what does the moon itself represent? What does Saturn itself represent? Not just from mythology, but from experience, we're talking about a kind of an archetype that exists in some other dimension. Right? Jupiter does not have an address on Madison Avenue. Jupiter is what Jupiter represents in astrology is like a concept lingering, just outside of our perception, and this is true of all the tarot cards and all the runes and any other symbols with which we have a conscious interaction. And we might ask, is our consciousness causing the symbols to exist? But I am happy to revert to the concept of Aleister Crowley when explaining about the major arcana, or the Atu, which he calls the Atu, is that the archetypes live with us, and we live with them. We coexist with the archetypes, and they coexist with us. Here's another principle that is highly dominant in astrology called synchronicity. Jung and others, we all know this exists, we don't need to even reference Jung, but they documented meaningful acausal coincidences or relationships between events in the real world and symbols, which convey information of some kind. These are called synchronicities. Synchronicity is a word, it's a really weird coincidence, or a spontaneous eruption of highly appropriate symbolism. Astrology invokes synchronicity by its very being. We see where chart symbols and life events are related without needing to know the cause. To say that planets cause events is not exactly wrong, but it's not so simple. There seems to be a simultaneous cause of both, or an effect which charts and experiences reflect, where charts and experiences reflect certain similarities that make sense to us if we look. And I would add, if we look with an open mind. Jung, being curious about astrology, he was actually quite a well-trained astrologer, did a study which showed that married couples will tend to have a conjunction between their charts involving the sun, the moon, or the ascendant. And I end the article with this question. Could it be that all these properties of the cosmos and of astrology point to another larger reality? Yeah, they better. Could we be plotting patterns in higher dimensions that will form a picture, like dots in a two-dimensional field can be connected to form an image? Or even point at a three-dimensional field, four-dimensional field? What are the implications for counseling and solving problems and creating visions in the field of consciousness and experience? The topographic ocean that we call life. Let's keep asking. Okay, this has been a long 34-minute journey. Please give this another listen and see if you can find examples in your own experience of astrology of what I am mentioning, of these principles. I'll go over them quickly and we'll attach this article. Space-time as one phenomenon, matter and energy as one phenomenon, particles and waves as one phenomenon, Chaos and Fractals, Multidimensionality, the Transpersonal Realm, and Synchronicity. These, I believe, are the known and documented principles that are lurking behind astrology, but none of them actually explain divination. You can give it a name, but you can't explain how it can be that the Grateful Dead were looking for the name of their band when they realized it was another band called the Warlocks, and someone flipped open the Funkin' Wagnall Dictionary and landed on the word Grateful Dead, which is a kind of myth. It's a kind of a story. And this became the name of the band, and it became very, very big and relevant and is an incredible name. That is a form of a synchronicity, and they did not look in the dictionary twice. They flipped it open. Somebody flipped it open and put his finger down, and it landed on the term Grateful Dead. It's a very interesting kind of myth. We see it a lot, but it is essentially, literally, about a grateful dead person. Okay. All that said, I'm going to post this and send out an email, and please say something back on the email list. Okay, bye for now.